Om Shanti. So your heart is not that thing which pumps the blood, it's a different thing. So one is you have something called the heart chakra. Have you got one? It's supposed to be here around somewhere. And then another aspect of the heart is that it is really the core of your soul. And so it's the most subtle part of your soul. It is the most fragile, delicate, private, and reserved section, which you do not show to anyone, right? Yes? But many BKs, they have frozen heart. Anybody got frozen heart? Okay, we have a few hands up. Then we have broken heart. Anybody got broken heart? It should be most people. You're not telling because it's private, right? And then you have stone heart. I hope there's not too many with that. Because stone heart person, that's a cruel person. So we don't want that really. But if a frozen heart melts, what happens? Probably a flood, right? You know? And a broken heart is shattered and fragmented and lots of cracks. So these you can fill with gold. So have you got a nice amount of gold? Because then, you know, what you want to be is a golden heart, right? Golden heart? Yes? I like golden heart. Golden-hearted BK, that's pretty nice, huh? And long, long ago in the ancient past, before most of you ever came to Madhuban, but in the, if there's anyone old enough to remember like 40, 50 years ago, the BK culture was ultra, ultra loving. Do you remember? And so there is this history. And we know from the beautiful temple that is here by the name of Dilvara that Baba is, you know, they translate it as comforter of the hearts, but Dilvara doesn't actually mean comforter of the heart. It just means the one of the heart god. You know, Dilvara, he's the one of your heart. Is that right? Yeah. So you give your heart to Baba, yes? And Baba gives his heart to you, and that's called spiritual love. In Greek philosophy, there is something called Eros, Philos, and Logos. Have you heard about that? Well, Eros you've probably heard of. That's like physical love, which Baba's not too keen on. Then there's Philos, which is love of knowledge, which is the intellect, loving the intellect for truth. And then Logos is a very, very deep kind of love, which is really love in the heart for truth. And so this is called Platonic love. Platonic love? Heard about that? Yes, no? Platonic love is where you love someone very, very deeply, but there's nothing to do with sexuality or desire or dependence or attachment or anything like this. So there's many different kinds of love, and there are different words in different languages for this. And our relationship with God is really love. We have a saying which is quite well known in India and which comes in the Murli quite a few times. Preet buddhi vijayanti and vipreet buddhi vinashanti, at the time of destruction. That means if you have love for God in your intellect, you will be victorious. And if you have hatred for God, they would say no love, but it's actual hatred. Hatred for God in your intellect at the time of destruction, then you will be destroyed. You know this one, right? But not in that extreme translation. It's a bit watered down, but it means that. So we need to think in our thoughts about the heart, whether we're talking about emotion, whether we're talking about something deeper than emotion, which I think we are, whether we're talking about an idea or an ideal. So these are very subtle things, but I think that to open up the heart also means to open up your trauma. Have you got trauma? Most people have. Yeah. This is normal. There's many different descriptions of trauma, but in this particular case, I'm talking about how, especially as a very young child, and that can sometimes include a young, not yet hard carapace, thick-skinned BK who can handle anything, you know, you get hurt, right? Sometime you may experience being rejected. Have you ever been rejected? Nobody? Oh, that's quite a lot. Yes. So when you are rejected, you feel quite sad and hurt. Because we have this word that everybody likes, belonging. You want to feel that you belong. You don't actually want to have anybody take possession of you. You don't want to belong like that as a piece of property, no. Because I think you like your freedom. Am I right? You like freedom? But it's very important, I think, for us, the community of Brahmins. And, you know, when Baba talks about the Brahma Kumaris gathering, he uses three very interesting words, none of which is organization. He says we are parivar. Parivar means family, extended family. So when we come to Baba, we become part of a spiritual family, and when you're in a family, then there is an assumption that what ties the family together is a feeling of love because it's one family. And so we are the Brahmin family, parivar. Then Baba also uses the word kul, kul, which means the clan, effectively. So the family is smaller, the clan is a bit bigger. You know, like in Scotland, you have a clan with a tartan, and our tartan is totally white. But anyway, the clan means that you have a culture that you are part of, that you are loyal to, that you honor, that you feel is part of your sense of identity, you know. And when Baba talks about this word Brahmin culture, we're still trying to figure out what Brahmin culture is. And I think opening the heart and thinking about the family and the clan in the from the angle of love, deep spiritual love, love for one another, love for the family, This is a very important part. The third expression Baba gives for us is Sampraday. And Sampraday, I tend to see that as meaning community. So we are a community, we are a clan, we are a family, and there is a bond of love that holds us together. And even if everything breaks down, sometimes everything breaks down, right? But still, your bond of the community holds you together. And you know another Brahmin by their vibration, by their aura, by the look in their eyes, by the feel of that person. Sometimes I will arrive somewhere at an airport and there's lots and lots of people to meet the arriving passengers, and I look around and I can always see who the Brahmin is, even if I don't know them, even if they're not wearing white, because of the vibration and the light in that person, you know? It's a lovely thing. So this trauma that has happened, why is there trauma? I think partly it is because it's the 84th birth. And in the 84th birth, I think probably as soon as you get born, the karmic accounts start getting activated and you start experiencing things. Some people, they experience that they're born in a family that they don't really have much connection with that family. Have you experienced that? And sometimes we talk about it, and the thought we have about this is that, well, Baba said, anyway, he said that he sent those of us who are from the West. There's two kinds of double foreigners. There's Indian double foreigners who are still actually Indians, but then there's other double foreigners who are not Indian in terms of this body, and you are raised in a different culture, but yet you are an ex-Indian deity. And so you would have had most of your 84 births in India. You might have traveled around all over the universe, but still, the deep connection in the deity soul is with India. And so you arrive somewhere, and Baba had said in a Navyakt Murli in response to this question that how did we get here, he said, well, it's a very practical reason that I sent some of you so that you wouldn't have any passport issues and so that you would understand the language and the culture really well, because you can't really serve people with another language and another culture, another religion, if you don't know it. And if you grow up in it, you know it very well. But yet, as soon as you encounter Baba and you hear the knowledge, immediately you say, yes, these are my people, this is me. Yes? Is that your experience? And so this also awakens that love for Baba and his family that he has created. And I always tell people he's extremely fussy who he adopts, right? He's not going to adopt just anybody. Some people, when they realize that Baba has adopted them, they say, why me? Did you experience that? I'm just, you know, what about my next door neighbor? Why not, you know, the other person? No. You are so special, so extraordinary, and so heavily disguised, you don't even know who you are. But Baba has tracked us, you know. And of course, one of the wonders of the confluence age is we have massive karmic accounts with other BKs. Is that right? And so, it's not surprising really, because who do we spend time with? Of course, during Golden Age and Silver Age, everything is nice, and there's no karmic accounts playing out or getting created. But we have had, you know, 63 births together in some body consciousness with some, all this other kind of drama going on. We have karmic accounts because we must be held together. And we can't disappear from each other too far, you know, get lost. So our karmic accounts hold us together, but they have to be played out. And of course, Baba's very efficient and very effective in how he organizes everything. So he will arrange for the settlement of karmic accounts to happen simultaneously with the development of various powers and virtues. So this is more efficient. And so this is why we are together in centers, small groups, and we are together doing service together. It's usually during service that we experience the karmic accounts happening, right? And then we experience more competition, conflict, it shouldn't be like this, it should be like that, da 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 da. And as you might know, I try to get away from the normal moral response to these things, because in morality we're always talking about it should be like this and it shouldn't be like that. And I remember there was one very interesting Avyakt Murli, I don't know the date, but it's there somewhere, in which Baba said, your only problem, only one problem, is you get caught up in right and wrong. This is right, this is wrong, should be like this, shouldn't be like that. So in order for us to actually love each other, this is the number one practice, is to get away from this is right and this is wrong. Sorry about that, but it's really very important. And so for that, we need our virtues and our powers. And we listen to the voice of conscience, because in Gyan, all these things get activated. Baba has been called the ocean of virtues, right? Never heard him called the ocean of values, yeah? Ever heard that? No. So they're more important, because he is the source of virtues. And when a person is operating in interaction with us on the basis of their specialities and their virtues, what do you experience? You like them, right? Definitely you like them. Because when somebody is expressing their virtues, you find it very pleasant, they are very nice, they are very loving, they touch your heart, everything is good. Yeah? So in order for us to experience the give and take of love, I think it's very good for us to be operating on the basis of our own virtues and seeing the virtues of others. Sometimes I think that, okay, if Baba's the ocean of virtues and he distributed all his virtues to his children, so there must be a good, you know, 900,000 virtues out there somewhere. And, you know, he says that the minimum amount of virtue that you will have is one. But mostly people have more than one virtue. And so he gave some virtues to some people, other virtues to other people like this. Because if you have a particular virtue, you generally call it a gift. Is that right? Someone has a gift of sweetness, someone has a gift of compassion, someone is gifted with, you know, these are gifts. And so you could get virtues from Baba by focusing on Baba, but you can also pick up Baba's virtues that he has distributed to other BKs by looking at them via the third eye. Because when you see through the two eyes obviously you see the defects, yeah, because they're really visible. And their virtues tend to be quite deeply hidden because they're private, and then they live inside the heart. And so when you see with the third eye, then you're able to discern a person's virtues. And when you can discern them, it is also a process of absorbing those virtues into yourself. So the fraternal relationship that we have, we're all brothers and sisters, right? So it is said about fraternity that the karma between siblings is love and regard. Yeah, we don't have any further obligation to each other than love and regard. In Lokik, in comparison, when we have my phone, sorry about that, but it'll stop. I can't stop it from here. In Lokik, you have relationship with people. You may be somebody's mother, father, child, cousin, this or that. And these Lokik relationships have certain implications of the relationship where you have obligation. And Baba frees us from that. In the Western world, it's not so pronounced as it is in India. It's all very detailed, and if you want to understand it, you can read the Manusmriti. Have you heard about the Manusmriti? The Manusmriti in English, they call it the Laws of Manu. And this was compiled about 1,000 years in the past by a gathering of people who decided that they needed to write a book about all the laws, the social laws, so that society would function well. And that means everybody needed to know what are the obligations according to their relationship. And if everybody does according to that, then there will be peace and harmony. But Baba says, no, there's a better way to have peace and harmony, which I definitely agree with, but until Baba comes, you can't have that. So now that Baba comes, we can actually dispense with these man-made rules and regulations about how people should relate to each other. And he simplifies it by saying, you know, I am your everything. Your mother, your father, your teacher, your guru, your friend, your guide, your companion, your doctor, your lawyer, you know, so many other things. And for you, with each other, your relationship is love and regard. But because there are karmic accounts, you need a lot of virtues. That's very helpful. And you also need powers. Now, number one, power needed in relationship with other people where there's karmic accounts is tolerance, flexibility, accommodation. Yeah. If you're operating according to a kind of a moral approach to it, you say, oh, somebody has this position, therefore they should have this, that, and the other characteristics. But somehow it doesn't work like that. Have you experienced that? That whatever somebody's position is, they have different characteristics than what you assume they should have. But if you say, okay, the position is not the person. So you have to relate differently to the position and differently to the person, even though it's one person. So whatever characteristics the person has, you need to work with your virtues and your powers. And whatever position the person is occupying, you have to honor the position and interact according to the requirements of your position vis-a-vis their position. And if you do it like that, it's fairly practical and easygoing. But the open heart can do it better than if the heart is closed. And what will close the heart or freeze the heart or break the heart is trauma. So I have this idea, it's not figured out yet, but it's on the way, that we need to see some kind of a convergence of the spiritual and the psychological in order to heal the damage to the heart that is there. And some people, when they are settling their karmic accounts, traditionally in India, you see people settling karmic accounts through illness, physical body illness, and pain, physical pain. And another way in which things erupt is the pain in the heart and the mind, and something more like mental illness. And I'm not really talking about clinical depression or schizophrenia or any of these clinical conditions, but something much more non-medical. You know, somebody will say, "I feel depressed today," doesn't mean they've got a depression. Or somebody will say, "I feel alienated." That doesn't mean that, you know, they need to go to the mental hospital, you know. So there is this range of feelings that people have. Sometimes people feel self-doubt, and they will feel unworthy, because we have this word worthy all over the Murli. And I actually look at this word layak more like competence than worthy, because in English language, whenever you hear the word worthy, it means unworthy. You know, that's how people take it. Because these words, emotive words, they have a load on them. And these loads are connected with trauma, and they're connected with different kinds of violence that you may have experienced in your conditioning and culturation as a child. Because nowadays, psychologists say that much of parenting practices is child abuse. You know, especially the older you are, the more it's like that. And slowly, slowly, people started to realize that, you know, it's okay to be nice to children. And if you're not, then these very fragile, delicate-hearted beings get damaged for life. And this is because of the culture. It's because of a very punitive type of morality that was quite in vogue from the Victorian times. And now the researchers have found that it was like a seriously bad idea. But to repair from that is a big job. And I think this process of opening the heart is very much to do with going deep inside and seeing where the cracks are, where the incisions have been made, you know. And sometimes you will hear some statement about yourself which will be like a knife going in, and then it leaves blood dripping and a scar. And very often these things are told by people who are very, you know, important, and that you respect a great deal. And there's an assumption that what they say is automatically the truth, and that if they say something nasty about you, it means it's true. And then you have to accept that. So you internalize it, and it creates a wound. And then it stays there. And when you come in Gyan, it will be needing to be healed, but you may not know how to heal it. So I think this is something quite important that needs to be looked at and that we need to be very sensitive to. There are assumptions, say, in the Abrahamic religions, which means Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, that the soul is fundamentally bad, and that especially children are likely to be wicked, and that they have to be contained and constrained and molded by the adults, who are all really good people. Except that if you look at it really closely, what you find is the other way around. And so to reverse this whole culture is quite a big deal, but it's coming along. And Baba is not part of that process. From Baba, when he talks to us, he says, sweet, sweet children, right? It doesn't mean he's going to make you sweet. It means he thinks you already are sweet. And he says, you know, you have each other, but I only have you. As he said in one of Murli, very, very touching. When you can actually feel from Baba's words what he feels about us, his children. And these type of words that he says do touch the heart, and they do actually heal the heart. So I think one very good practice that we can use is to see all the nice things that he says about us and take it to heart. And that's sometimes quite difficult because the way one is raised in the, I can say, Northern European world or some other places also, if somebody says something nice to you, about you, you will immediately not believe it. Is that right? So, this actually is a problem. This is sanskara, which is put upon us from the outside. You know, in India, there are two different ways in which sanskaras are said to arise. They usually say that your sanskaras are given to you by your parents as you get raised, right? And you don't usually hear much about that when you're studying Gyan in the Western world, but you need to know that because it's a very important reality. Because the way that people have reflected you back in maybe sometime a negative way creates sanskaras. And that is, it creates sanskaras of self-doubt, it creates sanskaras of lack of self-worth, and it's not anything you did. It's something someone else did to you, from which you have to heal and recover and come back to normal. And this is hardly ever mentioned in our teachings, but it is actually a well-known reality. And so I think it's quite useful to take it into consideration. One of the things that Baba talks to us about is not taking sorrow, right? He says, don't take sorrow. Of course you take sorrow. Plenty. If you didn't, he wouldn't be saying so. But what is the origin of taking sorrow? It is this culture of raising children by punishing. And, you know, they tell you, you have ego problem, you have this, you have that, you have the other. Rarely do they say something supportive. And I had a meeting with one child psychologist from Thailand who was here. And I was asking him, because he specializes in child trauma, and he was also saying the same thing, that the way parents raise their children, they will point out what's wrong And very, very rarely will they ever say something nice to the child about the self. Extremely rarely will they say they love them. Well, you're good, you know, and you did well, and this sort of thing. And so this creates an imbalance in the soul. And this is the seed of taking sorrow. And because when a child is told this for their entire childhood by their parents, their teachers, their religious leaders, obviously they're going to believe this, you know, very large amount of negative feedback that you get and very tiny amount of positive feedback. And this is why people feel low, bad about themselves, insecure, lack of confidence, and so on and so forth. It's totally because of the way people are raised in this culture. And then Baba says, okay, reverse that. A little bit easier said than done, but at least you can start to analyze how it's operating, and incident by incident, how to undo that. This is a very big piece of work. So when we meditate, we say sometimes, I don't know if anybody does, but we could, I am a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul. Is that right? We don't believe that. Because of this other stuff, you know, theoretically, I'm a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul, intellectually, but in reality, maybe I might not even make it to the Silver Age, you know. This kind of thing goes on in people's minds. Baba calls it waste thoughts. Waste thoughts, I think, may not be the best translation for this word, viart. We have samart and viart for thoughts. Samart is translated as powerful thought, and viart is translated as waste thought. Yeah, and so we think about waste thoughts and powerful thoughts and this sort of thing. But there's another way to think about those words. And viart, to me, means something that doesn't have any real meaning. The actual meaning of the word, viart. It has no meaning. It's not significant. It's trivial. It's not real. Viart. So, if you're thinking thoughts that are not really true, they will damage you. And the reason you think those thoughts is because you've been trained to think them. So you have to undo all this training. And then samart means thoughts that have a lot of meaning. So if you think, okay, you know, God says, I am a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul, and the rest of the planet, whether it's a BK planet or the non-BK planet, they say the opposite. Yeah. So who is right? One side God, other side, everybody else. Who is right? What do you think? God? Or all these people? Yeah? God? Okay. Now, if we say, okay, God is right, not I have to become a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul. No, no. I am already a pure, peaceful, powerful, blissful, loveful being of light. And all these messages that I have received from all these various different sources have been basically incorrect, untrue, and damaging. And so I have to neutralize the effect of them. This is called finishing a particular kind of sin, because to me, once you come in Gyan, you start to know about three kinds of sins. One of them is sin of commission. That means you do something you're not supposed to do. We already know about that. Then there's a sin of omission, which means you didn't do something you're supposed to do, so we already know about that. But the third one, which people don't have any background or sanskaras to deal with, is the sin of taking in or internalizing negative expressions about yourself that are given to you by people in authority. And this is called taking sorrow. And so to undo that is a big piece of work. And I think it's quite a good thing to look at your heart and your chart. Because your heart is used to taking sorrow. And when you take sorrow, how do you handle it? You handle it by creating an ego mask. And people often tell you you have a lot of ego, right? You must have heard that by lots of people tell you, oh, you have this ego, that ego, the other ego. But to me, this is a mask that you have constructed to protect your heart from these negative statements, you see. But an ego mask is not really yourself. So we need to replace these ego masks with a different arrangement. Maybe something like, oh, you say, I am this, that, and the other, unworthy, no good, useless, BK. Well, you're welcome to your opinion, but God thinks I'm a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful being of light, and He thinks I'm cool, and He selected me not because I'm useless, but because I'm actually pretty good. So, if you can't see it, open up your third eye. Can you do that? You know, we have to sort of give a response. Instead of taking in the sorrow, you have to give a response which is coming from what Baba calls your seat of self-respect. Which I don't call it a seat of self-respect, I call it a seat of self-honor. I like the word honor better, because you can honor what Baba has said about you. You don't need to honor what somebody thinks about you or says about you by looking at you with their two eyes. Because if they would be seeing you through the third eye, they would see all this, whatever Baba sees, they would also see. Right? Stands to reason, no? Yes or no? Yes? But it's a sanskar. Sanskar of taking sorrow, and no sanskaras are protecting the self from taking sorrow. So we need to create and activate and figure out many different ways to be on this seat of self-honor and not take on or take in these statements of other people. Maybe it's because this is a race. You know, Baba says this is a race, this is a horse race, which is another word for a competition. It's a very stiff competition because there are 8 spots that you're looking for, right? You'd be one of the 8. And there's maybe 1 million competitors for 8 places, a bit like the lottery, you know. And Baba does say he's given us a lottery, but don't lose your lottery ticket. If you say, okay, Baba has selected me, He has made me His personal student, He has taught me everything there is to know, but how much have you studied? Not that much. Study means really go deep. And if He says that you are this, 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 and this, and you say, He's probably thinking about somebody else. No. He's thinking about you. And He says, no, you are the one who used to be the royal, kingly, deity being, and you pass through 84 births and you lost all of this and you acquired all kinds of other self-deprecating attitudes, bad attitudes towards the self, you internalize what people say about you. You know, somebody might think you're the wrong color. Your body's the wrong color. Excuse me, I'm not a body. Wakey, wakey. Where's your third eye, you know? Or they say, oh, you're too old. Excuse me, I'm an ancient, original soul who is eternal and immortal and ageless. So thank you for seeing me as I am. Or they think that, you know, a lot of times when you have a broken heart or a frozen heart, what will you do is you will develop your intellect. This is a compensation. You will become very, very clever. And then people will feel ultra threatened by your super cleverness, right? And so they will do something to take you down. Stick knife in you, this or that. And in a way, it's a message to let us know that we haven't got the balance right between the head and the heart. So part of opening the heart is to make oneself able to feel one's own pain. Hope you don't mind. If you cannot feel your pain, you can't open your heart. Because your heart got closed because of an assault. An assault on your soul, an assault on your being, an assault on yourself, you know, your core of your being. And so when you open up your heart, you're going to feel that. And this is why you need a great deal of power of endurance. We don't hear about it much in BK, this power of endurance. We hear about tolerance, but endurance, in the Gita, it talks about endurance. That there are different circumstances. A negative circumstance arises, persists for a while, and then it will subside. And for the duration of its persistence, you have to endure it. And so all these things will come to you to hurt, and you need to feel your pain with the power of endurance so that your heart doesn't close down, freeze over, and then you are no longer able to love. You can't love with a stone heart. Stone heart means you hate. You will damage, you know. And if you look at people who are done for different horrendous crimes, it's always a reaction to severe abuse that they experienced in childhood. This is just well known. But our culture tends to punish people who are damaged instead of repair them. But Baba says that's a bit of a nonsense way to go about things. Much better to repair. And so he is called Vaidyanath, you know. This is one of the names of Shiva, Vaidyanath, which is the Ayurvedic doctor or the herbalist. You hear this word herbalist in the Murli. So he will give us such words which will cause us to feel our pain. Have you experienced that? No? You must have, yeah. And it's deliberate. Because when you can feel your pain, you can also feel yourself, you can feel your heart, and you need to be able to get through it so that you become free. And then you can function as a normal, balanced being where the head is functioning well, the heart is functioning well, and you know how to defend yourself from any kind of assault that happens to come your way, which is plenty. But as a small child, you will not defend yourself against these very high esteemed moral authorities who also stick it to you and give you damage for life. So it's a healing process, and in a way, the sin and the pain is one and the same thing. When you take sorrow, you do to your soul the same amount of damage as when you give sorrow to someone else. Most people don't know that. When you give sorrow to someone, you know that that's not good, right? But when you take sorrow, it's equally not good, because you damage your soul to the same extent by taking sorrow as you do by giving sorrow. Now, in the Abrahamic culture, taking sorrow is considered a good thing. Whereas from Shri Baba's point of view, that's nonsense. Don't take sorrow, you'll damage yourself. That's another kind of sin. So, but you don't have the background of bhakti to protect yourself from that. So you have to create it here and now in jnana, you know, to not take sorrow. And sometimes you will accept a lot of oppression in exchange for some marginal amount of position. It's not a good deal. It's really not a good deal. Don't do that. You're betraying yourself. You're not honoring yourself. Your position is, I'm a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful being of light. Is that a good position? That's enough, right? And then whatever karma you do, if you do karma from that place with plenty of internal power that you can handle negativity that is sent in your direction, then you can bring yourself back to this balanced state, because we're supposed to be super shaktis, am I right? So if you've seen the goddesses, like now it's in a Navratri's been going on, so all these goddesses with plenty of weapons, you know, have you seen the pictures? They have swords, they have trident, they have bowl of blood, they have some rosary, they have so many different things. And so we need to activate these weapons to protect the self from these different kinds of assaults to the heart, and be in our power, virtuous, powerful, pure, peaceful, loving beings of light, who people will experience as gods and goddesses through the vibration, the aura, the feeling that they feel from you, and you are seated on this seat of self-honor, and you are able to love, and you are not bothered by negativity that's sent your way, because you don't take it seriously, and you definitely don't take it in, because it's just a joke. They just can't see you, so why are you bothered? Right? So we will have some meditation. Om Shanti.